welcome to a very sunny Red FM studio. Thanks to Sinead Cullen for supplying the tunes for the last 4 hours. It is Sarah McKenzie Foley here with you for the next hour. I've got Las Vegas games on the agenda this evening, plus Formula One, rugby and some cricket as well. Let's get into it, shall we? Starting with Gaelic Games, where the Cork men's hurlers got their Munster Championship campaign underway in Walsh Park today against Waterford, and a goal was all that separated the teams at full time. The final score was Cork 125 to Waterford 225, and Colin Minogue has the full time report.
Full time here in Walsh Park, and it is Waterford who have beaten Cork by 3 points in a fantastic game of hurling. After a brilliant opening 35 minutes, it was the home team who led by 4 points after the break. A very early Jamie Barron goal in the first half proved to be the difference throughout this game. At the start of the second half, Pat Ryan's team came out of the blocks and scored 3 unanswered points to bring it back to a 1 point game. Drama unfolded in the 56th minute when Kieran Joyce was shown a black card for a foul on Jack Prendergast, and Stephen Bennett struck the penalty into the back of the Cork net. But the drama didn't stop there. Only 5 minutes later, Cork fullback Damian Cahalan was sent off after receiving a second yellow card. In fairness to the visitors, they did not give up, and Alan Connolly scored a brilliant goal at the 69th minute to give the Rebels some hope. But Waterford answered with 2 brilliant scores and held out to win. The Munster Championship is well and truly up and running after a fantastic 73 minutes hurling here in Walsh Park. It's Waterford who win on a scoreline of 225 to Cork's 125.
Locally in the Red FM Hurling League Division 1, Father O'Neill's beat Glen Rovers by 4 goals and 15 points to 1 goal and 18 points. Meanwhile, in Division 2, there was one game on the cards for today where St Finbar's secured a convincing win against Newtown Shandrum on a scoreline of 224 to 16 points. To the Premier League now, where there were 4 games there for decision this afternoon. Everton secured a vital 2-0 win against Nottingham Forest to push themselves further away from the relegation zone. And Shane Pennington has a full-time report from Goodison Park.
2 Nottingham Forest 0, and Sean Dyche's side give themselves some much needed breathing space at the bottom end of the Premier League table as they move 5 points clear of the bottom 3 with a crucial win over a Nottingham Forest side who remain just a point outside the relegation places. Idrissa Gardner-Gay fired the host in front from long range, and Dwight McNeil sealed the points with an effort from distance himself. Forest offered very little threat, with Morgan Gibbs-White wasting their only real effort shooting wide with only Jordan Pickford to beat. It's finished Everton 2 Nottingham Forest.
Elsewhere, Aston Villa have beaten Bournemouth 3-1, and Tom Ross has the full-time update.
Bournemouth 1, a big win for Aston Villa. It was Bournemouth, though, who went ahead, a penalty by put away by Solanke. But from the moment Villa equalised with Morgan Rogers, the game and the result was never in doubt. They were the better side, creating the better chances. It was Diaby who put them 2-1 up, and at the end it was Leon Bailey who added a third. But the man of the match for Aston Villa is the striker Ollie Watkins, who ran himself into the ground for the cause today. And that's good news for Aston Villa and for England. Aston Villa 3, Bournemouth 1.
In the other 3 p.m. kickoff, Crystal Palace earned a dominant 5-2 win against West Ham. Ryan Bromelow has the full-time report.
It's finished Crystal Palace 5, West Ham United 2. The Hammers lose crucial ground in the race for the top 6 as they are dismantled on the road by a scintillating Crystal Palace. 4 of those goals came inside the first 30 minutes. Elise, Eze, Mateta and an own goal from Emerson delivered the fatal blows, and Mateta helped himself to another after the restart. Michael Antonio crowned his 250th Premier League appearance with a consolation, and Dean Henderson misjudged a back pass from Mitchell to make the scoreline more respectable. But a pummeling display as it's finished Palace 5, West Ham United 2.
The final game of the day kicked off at 4:30 p.m. where Fulham host Liverpool. The latest score is 3-1 in Liverpool's favour, including a second half strike from Ryan Gravenberch, which marks his first Premier League goal, and that third goal, yes, has just been confirmed as okay from Diogo Jota. Potential, there was a VAR check there for offside, but it is 3-1 to Liverpool. There were incredible scenes at day two of the FA Cup semi-finals at Wembley, where Coventry City are into the second half of extra time as they face Manchester United. Coventry have pulled themselves back from a 3-0 to 3-all scoreline in injury time, thanks to a penalty from Hadji Wright. So, as I say, that game has now gone into the second half of added time, and we will bring you a full-time score when that's available. The winner is set to face Manchester City in the FA Cup final after they beat Arsenal 1-0 yesterday. To Formula 1 now, where it was victory for Max Verstappen today at the Chinese Grand Prix. McLaren's Lando Norris took P2, with the second Red Bull of Sergio Perez completing the podium places. In snooker, Joe O'Connor leads former world champion Mark Selby by 7-2 in a race to 10 in their first round World Snooker Championship match at the Crucible. That match resumes tomorrow afternoon. And finally, in rugby, Wales played France in the final game of round 4 of the Women's Six Nations this afternoon. It finished 40-0 in France's favour, meaning that Wales remain at the bottom of the championship table. Now, we are starting off with that game between Cork and Waterford in round 1 of the Munster Senior Hurling Championship. As I mentioned in the roundup, it was Waterford who prevailed, with just one goal being the difference between the teams. We heard the full-time report there from Cathal Minogue, and we are hoping to get reaction as well from pitchside during the show this evening, I should say, so we'll bring that to you as soon as it is available. But elsewhere in the Munster Senior Hurling Championship, the reigning All-Ireland champions Limerick defeated Clare by 315 to 118 at Cusack Park in Ennis today. Three quickfire second half goals put the current Munster champions back in the driving seat, having originally been behind by 5 points at half time. Off the ball's Tommy Rooney has the full time report.
It is full time in Cusack Park in Ennis, and Limerick have produced a remarkable fourth quarter turnaround to beat Clare by 3 points on a scoreline of 315 to 118 in their Munster Senior Hurling Championship round robin clash. With 53 minutes on the clock in this game, all was going to plan for Clare. They were 9 points clear, 115 to 9, and looked in total control. Limerick had clocked up 13 wides by that stage and were looking out of ideas, but they grew into the game from there. First, we got 4 points in 4 minutes before a Dermot Burns free dropped short and into the net. David Reedy reduced the gap to 2 points as the momentum had swung in Limerick's favour, but the killer blows would arrive minutes later. First, O'Dowley burying a goal before Aaron Gillan flicked in Garrod Hegarty's effort that was trailing wide. Clare were shell-shocked from 9 up to 4 down in 13 minutes of hurling. They could only respond with 2 points from sub Tony Kelly as Keane Lynch split the difference for Limerick. There's no rest for either side. Clare go down to Cork now next weekend in pursuit of their first win, whilst Limerick will welcome Tipperary to the Gaelic grounds for their first game. Full-time score in Ennis after an enthralling encounter, Limerick winning by 3, 315 to Clare's 118.
And Limerick senior hurling manager John Kiley spoke to Tommy after the game, so let's take a listen to that now.
Yeah, it was a fantastic last quarter, you know, and our last quarter in the league has been our poorest quarter. And, you know, to turn it around and for it to be our strongest was brilliant. Have to give great credit to the lads off the bench. I thought they did a brilliant, brilliant job, but massive impact. Gave us confidence, gave us energy, gave us accuracy, you know, and they've really challenged. And we knew it from our own in-house game last weekend that our lads that weren't on the first 15, you know, were showing real form, and they really pushed the other team all the way. So just delighted for those lads with the impact, and it keeps our bunch on its toes. So, you know, we weren't bad in the first half, we just didn't take our chances, you know, with 18 chances to their 16, came in 5 points down. That's tough going, you know, so we'd be disappointed with that. And, you know, there's some aspects of the game we know we're going to have to improve on, our own puck out, the opposition puck out. There's a number of areas that we can definitely improve on, and, you know, the energy levels will keep rising as we go forward as well. We're always, you know, much more energetic as we go forward. So for some of these guys, it's only their second game of the season almost, like, you know, they're coming back from injury. So to get that game in under their belt, massive, you know, huge plus.
Yes, okay, O'Dowley, English, Boylan, all the lads made a huge impact off the bench, but on the field the players reacted, and there was a couple of tweaks as well. What did you do differently? Did Keane Lynch come into the game more? Kyle Hayes move forward?
He brought himself back into the game, you know. He presented for the ball, he retained ball, he linked play, you know. I thought he was pivotal in the quarter. He came back and helped out in defence. He was everywhere. And, you know, he's coming back to injury as well, so there's lots more in the tank for him as well. He'd get great confidence out of getting through the full game today. So, yeah, listen, onwards and upwards. It's only game one of four, so, you know, got to keep it in perspective. Like, it's just 2 points in the board, but we're very, very relieved to get those 2 points in the board, yeah.
In terms of the energy it'll give you, John, like, with 53 minutes on the clock, Clare getting Tony Kelly ready to come on. They're 9 points up. Do you know, it's a very different story than coming around and turning this game around and winning by 315 to 118. Like, the energy it will give you now.
Yeah, listen, I just thought we kept our composure, you know, we stuck to the process, did what we'd been asked to do, and, you know, delighted that, you know, the work that Paul has been doing with the players over the last month in particular, you know, came to bear on this particular game today. And listen, we move on now, you know, it's a quick turnaround, we've only 7 days, we've tipped coming to the Gaelic grounds, you know, it's their first game, so, you know, listen, we have to move on from this now very, very quickly. Get a review done now on Tuesday night, get a recovery in tomorrow, and we push on for next weekend.
Final one, what was the message at halftime? Because you hit a lot of wides, you were five down. You could tell, you could actually hear you telling your defenders to not be putting hands on when they were running at you as well.
Yeah, listen, the message was just keep doing what we're doing, but there was aspects that we needed to do better as well at the same time, you know, and just a little bit more composure just, and just a little bit more accuracy. And, you know, sometimes you get that, sometimes you don't, but and thankfully we got it today. So
well done, Don.
Lot to do. Thank you.
Wow, the incredible scenes are continuing at the FA Cup semi-final. There was a fourth Coventry City goal in that second half of added time, but it's been ruled out for offside, so we are staying with 3-3. It looks like this one could very much be headed to penalties, but it was oh so close for Coventry City there. I'll keep you across the score of that game as we go on through the show. But it's been an extremely busy couple of days across several levels of Cork football this weekend, particularly for the ladies teams. The Cork senior ladies football team secured a win against Waterford yesterday in the first round of the TG Cahir Munster Senior Ladies Football Championship. And I was joined earlier by Ger McCarthy to discuss that game along with all the weekend's other major Cork football action. I am joined on the line now for a Cork GAA catch-up and catch-all with the one and only Ger McCarthy. Ger, how are you?
I'm really good. How are you?
Good, very good. I'm going to start off with the Cork Senior Ladies Football. As we've chatted about over the past couple of months, it's been a difficult time for the team, but surely this is a very positive result for them to build on going forward.
Absolutely, Sarah. It was... since the Cork LGFA seniors demotion from Division 1 running a very disappointing league campaign, but one in which I think people need to remember 8 regular starters have been missing through retirements or long-term injuries. A lot of young players have been sprung onto the panel ahead of when they would have planned to do that. And as a result, the league campaign, look, I certainly didn't see relegation coming at the start of the season, but that's just the way it worked out. Disappointment all round, a very, very disappointing defeat at home to Waterford, who was in the middle of all of that. So yesterday, heading to an absolutely sun-kissed Dungarvan, there was a bit of trepidation because it's been about 4 weeks and Cork were facing into a Waterford team under Pat Sullivan that had been really improving, not just this year, but over the last 3 or 4 years. They've always given Cork trouble, and we were expecting the same thing in Dungarvan. But I guess, as I mentioned in an article coming into this match, anytime Shane Ronan has had a block of training or a block of time alone with the panel, he has improved them. And the fruits of his management team's labour and the players' increased efforts were seen yesterday because they won 110 to 11 points. It was a very, very tough, hard-hitting physical Munster Championship game, as you would expect. But Cork left a few scores behind them as well. I think they could have probably won by more. But having said that, Waterford also missed a lot of chances. It was the first day out in Championship for both teams. But a hugely morale-boosting win for Cork, for the Cork players, and vindication, I think, for Shane Ronan. And what was a very, for people that have heard it on the Big Red Bench yesterday, a very emotional after-match interview where he and his management team, you know, just heap praise on their players for what the criticism that they've received in recent weeks and just answering that criticism in the best possible fashion and winning, as I said, 110 to 11 points to kickstart the Munster campaign.
Yeah, you have to say, I mean, I can understand why he would have felt like that. He's been very good defending his team all the way along, so it's great for them to get that result. Definitely have to mention Katie Quirk. She made a return after being out with an injury, and immediately her impact was felt from a scoring perspective. How much of a boost did you see that as for the team, having her back on the field?
Oh, unbelievable boost. I mean, it's one thing. Katie has been out. Katie Quirk, the Bright Rovers forward, is Cork's Cork's marquee forward now, that Darren O'Sullivan from Arnavi has retired. She is the go-to person for scores, and her absence throughout the entire league campaign, apart from the first game where they beat Galway in monsoon conditions, it seems like, you know, 100 years ago now, her knee injury was so, in terms of timing, Sarah, of all the players you couldn't afford to lose in a transitional period, your best and your most likely scoring forward is the least one, and that's unfortunately what happened to Cork with Katie Quirk's injury. she wasn't expected to be back this soon, but Shane Ronan did mention afterwards that the Cork physio Katie Nagel has done fantastic work with Katie, got her back to training the previous Monday night. It was her first full training session, and she kicked 5 frees, Sarah, in a game, in a really tight game where, you know, things could have gone either way on a day like with a really, really strong physical, you know, tough defence that Waterford have. Katie Quirk's 5 frees, but also her movement and her ability to bring other players into the game. Libby Coppinger played superbly, I think, because in part she had Katie making a lot of the runs that Libby would normally have to make in her absence. And I just think the forward line looked much better. Emma Cleary scored as well. And look, you know, I mean, on the day, Laura O'Mahony's goal was absolutely crucial. But, you know, Katie Quirk's presence in that full forward line for Cork, just her return, and just, you know, I only found out a couple of minutes before throw, and I was talking to Shane. He said, "You'll never guess who's back. She's starting today." And that's cool. Because the boost he got and the team got seeing her, and not just seeing her back, but seeing her back at full pelt, was a huge, huge thing for Cork. And if they're going to do anything this year, Cork, they're going to need Katie Quirk firing all cylinders. So, yeah, a real boost to have her back, and a real positive for Cork.
And you mentioned it there, it was a very tight game and it wasn't easy at any stage for Cork, but it looked like they managed to find an extra gear when they needed it. How much of that do you think they'll be able to replicate going forward, because their next game, you know, it doesn't get any easier, it's against Kerry.
It doesn't, next weekend against Kerry, All-Ireland contenders Kerry. I think the work that's been done in the month since, or the month or so since the relegation from Division 1, was clearly apparent. They're a much fitter, stronger side now. But there was a couple of key components. Quiver Richmond in goal, the Glanmire goalkeeper, had a really good day, which is always essential. You've got to have your goalkeeper playing well. As well as that, Aoife Healy from Cloyne at centre-back was outstanding. That half-back line as well, you know, Dara Kiley, Sarah Leahy from Mahada, and the captain as well, I mentioned for her, from Mourne Abbey, Maura O'Callaghan. Like, the big players stood up. And the spine of the team certainly looked a lot stronger. And when you've got scorers in there, when you've got Laura O'Mahony, when you've got Libby Coppinger, we've got Katie Quirk and Amy McDonough from Neva Vaughan, that's hugely important. But the other side of it, I think, too, is some of the younger players and some of the players that came off the bench now are starting to make an impact. Katie Driscoll from Clonakilty played the whole game. She's been one of the, you know, bonuses, I think, coming into the squad for the first time this year. Rachel Leahy as well from Mahada came on. Sive McGoldrick from Aero came on and scored a very important point. Lydia McDonough was another Neva Vaughan player to come on. And look, he needs a panel, Shane Ronan, and he needs momentum, and he's got both of those things now, but he'll need that and an awful lot more going to Brusna this weekend, because Kerry are a step up, with the greatest respect to Waterford. Kerry are a step up themselves, and Dublin and Armagh are the contenders for the All-Ireland this year. And I think Cork will learn a lot more about themselves, but the relief, I suppose, Sarah, of having the monkey off the back and having a championship win under your belt, even if they lose to Kerry, which they won't be thinking about going down there, they're Munster champ, they still have one last game against Tip to try and get to a Munster final, and they need to get to a Munster final, I think, for the development of the team. But look, the feel-good factor on the pitch afterwards, it was like, I mean, I remember standing on the pitch after the Waterford game in Park Earring, and it was like the height of winter, like it was cold, it was raining, and yesterday the sun, everybody, all the Cork supporters in great form, the players in great form, don't underestimate what this victory will mean for them.
100%. Hopefully it'll give them what they need going forward. I know we wanted to mention some of the underage teams as well, particularly the under-14A girls, who won a Munster title yesterday against Tipperary.
Yeah, fantastic. Both Cork under-14 teams are playing, are very active this year in the Munster LGFA under-14A and B Championship, and the A team won their gold final. They beat Tipperary 4-11-1-6 in Mallow yesterday. Lily May Kelleher, Shauna Keane, Nessa McCormick, Isabel O'Callaghan, Kate Clifford and Niamh O'Connor were on target for Paddy Lucy's side. And the county's under-14Bs are currently preparing for their Munster under-14 Championship Platinum final against Kerry, which is provisionally down for next Sunday in Mallow. So it's great to see the underage teams. The under-16A team is also involved in a Munster final today. They're taking on Kerry in Mallow late on Sunday afternoon. And it was also a very good day for Cork, because the Cork Senior B team, there's also a Senior B Munster Championship this year, and they had a resounding victory over Kerry as well yesterday in Clidove. And I know, you know, people might say, well, you know, the importance of having a B panel, you can't underestimate it, because there's so many players that want to get onto that A team, and they're pushing for places. So Kieran O'Shea was in charge of that team yesterday with the Cork the Cork Senior Bs. That beat Kerry in Clidove, so that's a very good start to their Munster Championship. And the Cork Minors are getting ready for next weekend. They're taking on Kerry in the Munster Minor Final, and there's a place in the All-Ireland Semi-Final against Mayo on offer for Jamie Cronin, so there. So So that's something as well to look forward to. So look, we've had a lot of doom and gloom surrounding the headlines maybe in LGFA in recent times, but when you take one glance at the underage section at the Senior B's and yesterday's victory, things are going really, really well, and it's a good time for Cork LGFA.
For sure. I mean, just everything you reeled off there, very exciting for that going forward. Let's give a mention finally to the Cork Senior Men's football team. They suffered defeat in the Munster Championship against Kerry yesterday. Now, John Cleary made no secret of the fact that within the camp they were strategising for a win, and they did lead at half time. What do you think came undone in that second half?
I think your best chance of taking down an All-Ireland contender like Derry, as Donegal showed yesterday, of apart from Dublin and Leinster and a few of those, is when you meet them on the opening day, Sarah, because once Kerry build a bit of momentum themselves, Dublin, Derry and Donegal are the contenders for the All-Ireland Championship this year. So going down to Killarney yesterday, I had hopes of an improved performance, but I just still didn't see enough this year to suggest to me that Cork would pull off a surprise. I was pleasantly surprised. I watched the game back and I was pleasantly surprised at Cork's decision to absolutely go for it from the first minute. If you're going to unsettle Kerry and you're going to take them on and you're going to get them out of their rhythm, especially on the opening day of the season on their home ground, go at them, don't sit back. And Cork did that, and they earned a half-time lead that was fully deserved. Disappointingly, and I suppose a little bit head-scratchingly, they weren't able, for a number of reasons, to maintain that tempo in the second half. And I thought they sat off Kerry a little bit, and that allowed Kerry back into the game. But I think, look, you've got to stand back for a second and look at the overall picture when it comes to the Cork senior footballers. This time last year, we are certainly a much better team under John Cleary than we were 12 months ago. We are still not able to get over the hump of beating Kerry, you know, in a Munster Championship match just yet. But the progress is clear. The squad is certainly deeper than it was this time last year. And Cork are looking at that draw for the All-Ireland Senior Football Championship and going into the group stages, where last year, don't forget, they beat Mayo, they beat Roscommon, and they pushed Kerry. So that's what the aim is. But it was disappointing. I suppose it's refreshing to hear the honesty of John Cleary. And don't think for one moment the players are taking anything from a positive performance. They're taking the word defeat to heart. They did not want to come out of Killarney with a defeat, nor did John Cleary. And it's good to hear that they've set their standards. The standards remain high. But this Cork team, I fully believe this Cork team is capable of taking out a major challenger in the group stages like they did last year. Reaching the quarterfinals of the All-Ireland Championship is a minimum target for John Cleary, minimum. And I think this team is capable, this panel of players is certainly capable of doing that. They picked up a couple of injuries yesterday. We'll see, have to see how Mara Shanley and a few others are. But if they play with the same intensity and increase the intensity over 60 minutes in the group stages, when that comes up, the All-Ireland Senior Championship, Cork most definitely are capable of reaching the knockout stages and going one better than last year. I think they now have the players and the confidence and a bit of momentum to do that.
Yeah, as you mentioned there, I suppose keeping the performance up for the full 60 minutes, where do you think they're lacking that depth, you know, that the bench is not quite making that impact where they can get those games over the line?
I think if you don't play the top teams on a regular basis, and it's been one of the problems with being a Division 2 team, Sarah, you don't play Dublin, you don't play Kerry, you don't play Monaghan, you certainly don't play Tyrone in the early stages of the year. That brings your performance levels up. No disrespect to Division 2 teams. This year against Donegal, it was the opening game with Jim McGuinness, as they were blown away above Ballybuffet, but it was the first day out and they had a lot of work done. Against Armagh, against another team capable of challenging in Ulster and further beyond, they drew with them in their final league game and should have beaten them, in my opinion, in Parky Cueve. That to me shows that they are capable of going toe to toe with a contender for the full 60-70 plus minutes. But at the moment in this life cycle of this Cork team, they're just as capable of maybe losing to Fermanagh or losing to Cavan by a point or two. That's just where they are. The consistency of challenging the top teams isn't there yet, because they don't get to play the top teams often enough, Sarah. Yeah. So that's why it's imperative they get back up to Division 1. It doesn't turn you into a contender overnight by being in Division 1, but it does increase the quality of the opposition that you play throughout the year. And I think that's the only thing that's missing from Cork at the moment. And I think they're capable of changing that. When they get back to Division 1, they become a much better team. In terms of fitness and in terms of strength conditioning, it's all there. I think just the belief, and I think just the ability to take down a top team. They did it last year against Mayo. They did it last year against Roscommon. They came close to rattling Kerry as well, so they're not afraid of the big teams. And I think when Cork go in as an underdog in matches, it actually suits their psyche and it suits their team right now. And I think that 60-70 minute performance is not far away, and we'll learn a lot more about where, how far Cork have come in the group stages of this year's All-Ireland Championship. But what I saw yesterday in Killarney for three quarters of the game gives me a lot of hope, and I suppose not just hope but confidence that Cork will take down a big name or two before the year is out.
Excellent. I think the overall, the underlining message of this conversation is lots of positive signals going forward, which is a very good place to be in. Ger, thanks as always for joining me here on the Big Red Bench.
Excellent stuff. Talk soon.
You are very welcome back to the Big Red Bench. It is Sarah McKenzie Foley here with you until 7 o'clock. Let's get you some updated scores. First up, it has finished 3-1 in Liverpool's favour against Fulham, so they'll take the full 3 points from that game and hope that it'll set their Premier League title hopes back on track. It's a very big couple of weeks coming up. In the FA Cup semi-final between Coventry City and Manchester United, it did indeed go to penalties, and United have just about managed to secure the win. They took it 4-2 on penalties, but I think an awful lot of questions will be asked after that performance, letting a 3-0 lead go and having to go back to penalties. That offside line just killed the dream in added time for Coventry City, unfortunately. I think anyone that's not a United fan, all the neutrals were definitely temporary Coventry City fans there for a minute. Let's talk Formula 1 now. It was Max Verstappen who took first prize at the Chinese Grand Prix earlier today, but aside from the winner pretty much being as expected, there was a lot more going on out there on the track that is absolutely worth discussing. First up, Lando Norris. He, I think it's fair to say, spared McLaren's blushes with a very unexpected podium finish, because McLaren had been anticipating quite a difficult weekend, but Lando Norris in particular pulled out an impressive performance across both the sprint and the main event of the Grand Prix to land a big points haul for the team and ultimately cement their third place spot in the Constructors' Championship, and very importantly also eat into Carlos Sainz's lead ahead of him in the Drivers' Championship. So there are now just 9 points separating the two former teammates, and Norris was only a tenth off the pace of Sergio Perez in the Red Bull during the first third of the race, which must have been a big surprise for the Papaya team, who had said earlier in the week that this was the race where they actually expected to struggle the most this season due to the setup of their car, which clearly, at least in the case of Norris, was not what came true on track. Oscar Piastri unfortunately didn't fare quite as well as his teammate, but he still managed to bring his McLaren home in 8th place. When I spoke to Planet F1's Sam Cooper on the Pondering Papaya podcast earlier this week, we figured that a double points finish would make McLaren happy enough, but they've achieved way more than that. So you have to say hats off to them, especially Norris this weekend. Meanwhile, at Ferrari, Charles Leclerc has taken the upper hand against Carlos Sainz after a slow start to 2024. And it was reported that Fred Vasseur had a quote-unquote chat with both of his drivers this week. And I don't know about you, but I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall for that conversation. But in any case, Leclerc did look strong this weekend, and he was able to extend his first stint of the race despite making overtakes during that period. So he was obviously managing to balance his tyre degradation alongside his race pace, which is exactly what you would want. And Leclerc is actually now P3 in the Drivers' Championship ahead of Carlos Sainz in P4, if only by a slim margin of 7 points. Nonetheless, I am happy to see that performance from Leclerc, because I think we all felt it was about time he spiced things up and made it up to the performance level that, to be fair, we know he is capable of. So that could make things more interesting at Ferrari for the rest of the season if the drivers are on more of a level pegging as we carry on through the season. Now, shall we talk about Mercedes? I mean, it's hard to know what to say, really, isn't it? Lewis Hamilton went from coming P2 in the sprint race to qualifying P18 for the Grand Prix, which is truly a monumental swing in performance, and obviously not in the direction that Mercedes would have been hoping for. And it got to the stage where Hamilton was just starting to laugh it off when he was asked about the car's performance in the media pen. I know that he has been experimenting almost constantly, but it may be time now to dial that back, look at the data they've gathered from the experiments that have been done so far, and try to figure out what the right direction is, because constant experimentation is fine, but it's not really serving a purpose if you don't at least try and move in at least one direction as far as what the data is showing you. So we'll have to see what happens on Hamilton's side of the garage. But George Russell, in fairness, managed his best race finish of the year in P6, largely flew under the radar. And I think, you know, on a weekend where their nearest rivals in McLaren were expected to struggle, I think Mercedes probably would have been quietly aiming to claw back some of the points difference to McLaren over this past weekend in China, but obviously that is not what has happened. Now, Toto Wolff has confirmed that there are upgrades coming for Mercedes at the next Grand Prix. So I think at this stage they'll be pinning all of their hopes on those upgrades making a serious improvement on what they are currently dealing with, because as Lewis Hamilton joked over the weekend, I thought it couldn't get any worse, but it did. It truly did. Anyway, Formula One is headed to Miami next, and it is a back-to-back for the reformatted sprint weekends. We have just had one in China, the first one of this year, and we are going to have another one, as I said, in Miami, and then four more after that. The Miami race is coming up on Sunday, May 5th, and the timings are becoming a little more palatable for us European fans. Lights out will be at 9 p.m. Although, to be fair, we can't complain, can we? We are definitely best placed as far as the majority of the races. But look, we appreciate not having to get up at silly o'clock to watch the action all the same. We are going to switch from Formula 1 to cricket now, and Cork Harlequins are launching their youth academy next week, and the academy is for boys and girls aged between 5 and 13, and everyone is welcome to come along and try the sport. The first session starts on the 29th of April at 6:30 p.m. and in advance of that, Rory has been speaking to Ted Williamson and Suki Byrne about the initiative.
All right, it is cricket season, and I am delighted to be joined on the line now by Cork Harlequins, Ted Williamson and Suki Byrne. Guys, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
Thanks, Rory. Thanks for having us.
Suki, I might start with yourself. We've known Ted for quite a long time on the show, but I believe this is our first time talking to you. Can you talk to us about your background in cricket and how you've ended up in Harlequins?
So I've been involved in cricket in Cork for about 5 years now. Recently just joined Harlequins, met Ted, and we started discussing about kind of bringing a new energy into the youth committee, kind of revitalising the new youth section at Harlequins. So I was very excited to join the club.
Fantastic stuff. And Ted, I imagine having Suki on board has been a massive coup for the club.
Yeah, it is. And like one of the things when you meet Suki, I remember the first time I met Suki down in actually Douglas Community School, and we were setting up for one of our first girls sessions, and without even asking, she started getting involved. And I remember I'd know, do you remember Suki? You just started doing a little catching drill with the girls. That shows great leadership without even being asked, just taking a bit of a lead and stuff. So the passion is incredible. And I think it does help as well that she has a couple of kids involved looking to play cricket and playing cricket. So no, it's absolutely brilliant to have Suki.
Suki, I suppose getting kids involved in cricket is what it's all about. And I suppose every club has its challenge in that regard. I suppose getting people involved and getting coaches involved and stuff like that. How have you found that at Harlequin so far?
Yeah, well, we're making sure that we can do all we can to get parents involved, get them interested in cricket. And a lot of it does come to the parents, those who bring their children there, making sure that they participate, they're interested. We have socials as well, doing all we can, really. And another thing that we're looking at this year, so across Munster, we recently been really lucky. We've agreed with Cricket Ireland that we can have some mascots go across for the Ireland versus Pakistan men's international T20 game. And what we're doing is we're trying to incentivize people across Munster now to get involved more in coaching on the youth committees. And, you know, for those people who do, we're going to be giving them some priority in terms of getting their children to be mascots at these games as well. So we're doing everything that we can. We're looking at kind of new, innovative ways to make sure that we can bring people into the game to help out.
And Ted, you know yourself, like, I suppose a successful youth section of a club is the heartbeat of any club, really. So it's vital that Cork Harlequins has a successful and thriving youth section.
Yeah, and I think it's something that we've seen come to fruition. You've been involved, I suppose, a couple of years ago, and we had our guys make it to the Ireland Cup final. But they would have started and come through our system going back like 7 or 8 years ago. So I think it's very easy to take your eye off the ball when it comes to when you have some success at senior level and you don't succession plan for the next 2, 3, 5, 10 years. So also people don't forget as well, I think that, you know, treasurers and secretaries and groundsmen and, you know, all these people aren't going to be there forever. So you need people who aren't, it's all about not playing at the top level. It's about getting involved in the club. And I think that's one of the things that I think we do really well in Harlequins is that you could have the treasurer out rolling the wickets. You could have the groundsman making tea. You know, it's not really about you have a set role. It's all about kind of digging in. And as Suki said, that's one of the things, like we have some really new fresh blood on the youth committee this year, and it has really energized everything. And I'd say the great thing is that it has some fresh ideas. And like one of the things that we're doing now, actually this coming Saturday, is we're going to do cricket for the hockey section up in Quinns, the hockey girls specifically. Suki could explain more, but there's a massive now input into Munster women and girls have their own committee for the first time ever now with some autonomy. There's fixtures coming out for women and girls this year for the first time ever, especially at a senior level, structured competition as opposed to friendlies. So it really is on the move. But I think you have to just keep your finger on the pulse when it comes to all age groups. Like we have them, I think, as young as 5 and 6 up in Harlequins. And again, the growth of it, I suppose, is that you have now multiple groups within a group, which again is we've never had before in Quinns, where you've had a couple of different softball groups plus a hardball group all in the one night. Normally it's soft and hard, if you know what I mean. So you have to come up with different ways, and as Suki said, innovative ways to attract kids in. And I think what you find as well, Rory, over the last kind of 10 years or so, non-contact sports has kind of come into its own a little bit. Cricket, tennis, other sports like that, swimming. So there's a sport there for everybody. And I think cricket is one of those ones that anybody can play, boy or a girl, man, woman, you know?
Mm. Yeah, and talked about the girls' side, the women's side of things, Suki, as well, because women's cricket is something that has certainly grown in Ireland over the last number of years. The Irish team now playing their T20 World Cup qualifiers very, very soon as well. So the interest certainly is there for women's cricket in this country.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've been involved in the Munster women's game as well as watching the girls progress into it. And I think it's a really exciting time now for any girl or any woman who wants to get involved in women's cricket or girls' cricket, especially at our club, because the emphasis now is really to train them, you know, so they can progress quite quickly into that newly formed Munster group, because there are like real opportunities for any girls or women coming through at this stage, because when it's always in the early stages, you know, there are a lot more opportunities for them to have that quick progression and, you know, be involved at that provincial level and play games and with other provinces as well.
Yeah, and there's a huge chance, as you mentioned, Suki's on the progression, there's a huge chance that like kids could go on and play for Ireland in the future as well.
Absolutely. And that's why, as I said, it's so exciting, especially kind of looking at it from the girls' and the women's perspective, because it is so new. We really want anyone out there who's listening, who's keen to embrace, you know, if they've never played cricket before, it's a new sport, it's new to them, it's a non-contact sport, come out, try it, see if it's for you. And if it is for you, there are lots and lots of opportunities for you to progress really quickly.
Mm. And Ted, I suppose this kind of leads on to, I suppose, the crux of the conversation here is that, like, for people, kids who want to try it out, you are starting a program starting on Monday the 29th of April for people to just come up and try the game and give it a go.
Yeah, it's I think everybody kind of has them in some way, shape or form, open days or whatever they're called these days. Mm. But we're calling it like an academy launch. Our academies are normally on Mondays. They're the kind of youngest kids in the club. It's an all hands on deck kind of night again, as you'd imagine. But I think having 2 senior internationals down is a big coup for the club. I'm not sure whether we've had even a female international down before, but to have both down on the same night and 2 quality people as well, Sophie and PJ. PJ, we know well from, he's captain of the Munster Reds, but has been away with the Irish Wolves and played test matches recently. And Sophie, you know, probably would have been away at that T20 squad, except I think she's currently injured, unfortunately. So it's a great way to inspire youngsters and of all age groups. I mean, speaking about myself, I took cricket up when I was 14. You know, people say if you have to take it up at 7 or 8, and it doesn't matter what age, boy or girl you are. The beauty of on the 29th is that we'll have plenty of different opportunities for all age groups to try out different things, different skills, get into a net, hit a few balls, catch a few balls, bowl a few balls, fun games, and then a bit of a Q&A with the internationals afterwards. So, we're just encouraging anybody at all, just come up and give it a go. Just literally give it a go. There was no cricket history in my family. My mom was the Glen and my dad was the Bars, and I went to the Mon All-Irish School when I remember asking the Christian Brother for a half day to play a game of cricket, and I had to back away.
That went well, yeah.
Literally, you know what I mean? Because but I saw it on the telly. That's how I got into it. So we just want people to come up and just give it a go, see what it's like to get out in a cricket pitch and just get involved and see where it goes from there.
Excellent, yeah. And so I suppose for kids like who are in sport already, I mean, like a lot of the skills that they would have from either like camogie or hurling or football or whatever it is are transferable over to cricket as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, having good hand-eye coordination. And it just depends, I suppose, on that particular child and how quickly they can adapt to the game. And if it's for them, essentially what we're saying is, you know, try it out and see if this game is a good fit for you. And for a lot of people, if you've never tried it before, then, you know, come along. There's lots of opportunities to see whether or not it works.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Yeah, you get a good turn of starting Monday. 29th of April, 6:30 is the start time. And as Ted mentioned, so McMahon and PJ Moore will be there. Guys, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you today. Wish you the very, very best of luck for the season ahead. Hopefully the weather will dry up if we'd like to be able to play some cricket this summer. But thanks very much for talking to us today in the Big Red Bench.
Thanks, Rory.
Thank you.
Okay, let's circle back now to that Cork Waterford hurling match today. As I mentioned earlier, we were waiting on some audio to come through, and the Echo's Dennis Hurley spoke to Cork boss Pat Ryan after the loss this afternoon. Let's hear his thoughts.
Pat,
she looked very disappointed. Looking fairness to Waterford, you know, we knew we were coming down for a really tough game, but look, they brought an awful lot of intensity to the game at the start and really took the game to us. Look, I was proud of both fellas, the way things went, a lot of us went against us in the second half. We got a great start, got ourselves back into the game, and obviously looked at the black card, and then obviously David was sending off with the hard, but look, awful as fast as we got around. Disappointing with 2 points we were hoping to get, but look, we've still 6 more to battle the way for, and we'll clear game next Sunday, and that was even more perfect.
Yeah, the opening, like, it was, he led early on, and he had the point, but then the goal, I suppose, gave Waterford life and maybe kind of knocked you back a bit.
Yeah, that's exactly what we expected, you know what I mean? This Waterford team is a very good team. And we knew that they had a lot of good players back from what they had in the league. And look, if you looked at our performance last year in the very first game against Limerick, it was a superb performance, and obviously they came down to us. But look, we knew it was going to be a really tough battle, and it was a really tough battle. They had a lot of good players. Look, disappointed some of the aspects of our play that wasn't good, and we need to try and solve that up for next week.
I think with the first half, I think only 1 or 2 in the second half.
With 10 wides in the first half, I think it was 10 or 11.
Yeah.
And that was it. Like, we didn't carry the ball into the grass as much as we would have liked, and left a lot of scores behind us. But look, I suppose we were positive at half time, and then we were winning the ball and we were creating chances. And look, I suppose it ended up being a big score. We just gave away a couple of easy scores towards the end. And look, in fairness, look, it was 13 and 15 there for 10 minutes, and that made it very hard to kind of create a couple of scores. And that, like, we look proud of offense.
Did you think those decisions were fair to play the back card and red card?
Look, it was hard to see it, to be honest. You know, I didn't actually look, in fairness to Joyce, I don't think he looked. I think your man was after carrying the ball a good bit. The game was won. I thought he left the play goal, like he would.
Even
have blue, he came back and did it. So look, but look, it's hard to see from where we are. Everyone's all excited, and look, we just have to get on with it. It's done now, and I suppose we can get an opportunity next week to put that game behind us. So we're back on the horse straight away.
Disappointed. I presume that you couldn't create more goal chances.
Yeah, I just didn't get the ball in enough.
Yeah.
Every time we got the ball in, as I said, we 10 or 11 wides, and we had great opportunities to get the ball into the lads early and to get them into the game, and we didn't do it. But you could see when the ball went in there, they were very dangerous, but look, we just didn't get enough ball into it, and we had possession. But look, that's just something we just need to analyse and work on for next week.
And do you think it'll be hard to pick the lads up now?
Fans are disappointed. Of course, they were all disappointed. Every cockfellow is going away from Waterford disappointed today. Look, we wake up in the morning and we have to wipe this away and we have to go again next Sunday. And that's the key thing. Look, we have two home games coming up now, back to back. It would be crowd in Cork, and then we need to represent the Jersey better than we did today.
And Clare coming down after a loss as well, I suppose, just brings an extra air of do or die.
Exactly. Look, we all know it's very tight. The championship is extremely tight. But look, we get a win next week and it puts us right back in it.
What does this week look like now?
We'll do recovery tomorrow, recovery tonight, recovery tomorrow, and we'll be back on the field Tuesday and Thursday, and we'll just look, get ready for Clare and see where they were, but get our best fellas back out. You know, we don't even picked up too many injuries, which is a great thing.
Just Hannity, Lahan and Morgan have all come off this place for about 11 or 12 minutes. Will that look different now next weekend again? Will they start three then?
We'll just analyse the way it was going. To look at the fairness, I think we'll take off a couple of forwards for two backs kind of that's dead. So, you know, like our hand was dead, and that's in that side of it. So, look, I wouldn't be reading too much into that. Look, I think the lads had a lot of knock out of our choice. Just didn't get enough ball into Patrick and Helen. Do you know what I mean? That's the key. We didn't get enough ball into our inside line, where they were very dangerous. So we did.
The audio turned into a bit of a party there at the end. Apologies for that. Let's hear now from Watford's Davy Fitzgerald, who shared his thoughts after the game as well.
All we can do is work hard, and we'll enjoy today, but we still know we have work to do. We're not there. We have work to do, but the fighting spirit that they showed, really happy with it. But we have more to do.
How much of a motivating factor, Davy, was that noise outside the camp?
To be honest with you, not really, no. You'll have people that'll want to say stuff. That's fine. Everyone, the one thing I've got to accept from the players, people have opinions, and you've got to let them have them opinions, whether they're good or bad, and you accept them. And if people want to give out about Davy Fitz or the Waterford team, let them off. They're entitled to do that. Let them off. It doesn't feel nice because we're working so hard, but we can't dwell on that. What we decided to dwell on was us and what we could do a small bit better, and I think that's the most important thing. So it was nice today to have the Waterford supporters behind us and hear them cheering Waterford. It's nice. And it'd be nice with days like this all the time. I can't say we will, but all I can tell you is I think you see how hard we worked, and we'll continue to try that. We're in with a chance now, no matter what. We've a chance of getting out, and you never know. So, but teams are going to be ready for us now as well. It was a bit easier today going in as underdogs. We were wrought off. I think Waterford normally went to the Munster Championship favourites. Not a bad way to come in the way we went in. So we'll see, but it's tough. We know what's ahead of us.
When did you decide to put Dizzy Hutchinson on the freeze, Davey, because it really paid off today?
Some days you get them right, some days you don't, you know. We tried Shane, we tried Dizzy, Stephen was there, Stephen was back in as well. So, Dizzy's top class forward, so it makes sense to give him a go. And I know people say it was his first time taking freeze in the Munster Championship game, but why not? It worked today, and that's grand, you know. But apart from the freeze, it's the effort I'm really happy with, you know.
You must be happy with Tadhg De Burka last in the full game.
He didn't do bad for a lad that has played no game time in any year. Tadhg is a special guy. To do what he did today, to come back from what he did last year, takes a lot of character, and it takes resilience. And as you can see, he's a very smart player as well. And for him to last outside, he hasn't played a full game. Even in training games, the most he played was 55, 60 minutes. For him to last outside there today, it was his mental resilience that got him through that.
And how central is it, Davey, to get a win in front of that? You know, you saw what it meant to the supporters after today. It was Welsh Park was really rocking, wasn't it?
That's what we want. Hurling is up and down, guys. It's tough at times, and it's nice to get that today. We know ourselves, that's only one win, and we've more to do, and we've got to keep grounded, and we've got to go back and improve and work even harder. But I actually think there's more in this team than you've seen. I think there's more in it.
Tipperary now, how does the next couple of weeks play out for you?
I'll tell you the truth now, but I don't want to think about Tipperary. I'm hardly able to stand up as it is, right? So maybe on Tuesday we'll think about Tip, right? The good thing is we have a break for 2 weeks, which is no harm. So, lads, I'll switch off for there. We know Tip will be a massive challenge, but I don't want to think about it right now. I'm sure you'll allow me a day to just enjoy this one. It's been tough.
Sorry, Davey. What was the message all week to the lads? Is it mostly tactical, or are you geeing them up or playing them down?
you know, given the lead that she had.
Yeah, as I've said to you, within our camp, we weren't bad about the lead. We weren't bad about the lead. We knew we were right there. If we were getting hammered, we'd say, we've a problem. We knew we hadn't a problem, so we hadn't. But am I going to tell you what we said during the week? Not fucking hope. Like, in all fairness, it's a bit of both, and I want to, whatever we're trying to do, we'll try and keep it to ourselves as much as possible, so we will. But do I know we can still improve? I do, but I'm really proud of the tackling and the effort. I think you see the tackles that went in today were absolutely fantastic, and that's what you want, and I'm really proud of them. But today is today. I'm not stupid. Like, we're not there. We have more to do, and I know that. I know we're a long way off qualifying for Anton yet, so we'll enjoy this little 24 hours and then we'll go, okay?
How was Shane Bennett, Davey? He wasn't part of the 26 today.
That was for Shane. Shane Bennett has been incredible. I can tell you the form Shane Bennett was in was frightening. I promise you, it was frightening the way Shane Bennett was playing. Frightening. He would have been starting by a mile today in some shape. What he went through during the week was, it was really, really tough. Really tough. Just a freak accident. And it was really tough on him, but the lads did that for him as well today, because he's been so good since he came back from Australia. He's worked so hard, and fair play.
Will we see him for the rest of the championship, David?
Huh?
Will we see him in the rest of the championship, Shane Bennett?
I don't know yet what the story is. I'd be hoping, maybe. Listen, you never know. I don't know. Let's see what the next week or two brings, and after that.
And apologies for the bit of colourful language there during that interview with Davy Fitzgerald. I'm going to bring you a full-time report now from that Liverpool 3-1 win over Fulham. Kat Suarez reports from Craven Cottage.
Finished Fulham 1, Liverpool 3, and it's a huge 3 points for Jurgen Klopp's side, bringing them level with Premier League leaders Arsenal, just sitting below them on goal difference. Liverpool always looked the more threatening side, with three stunning goals from Jota, Alexander-Arnold and Gravenberch. Fulham weren't totally outplayed, with a goal from Castagne drawing them level at half-time, but they lacked the final touch in the box to really bother their opponents. Liverpool returned to winning ways in the Premier League, and this keeps them firmly in the title race. Fulham 1, Liverpool 3.
And of course, we're going to have to get a full-time report as well from that Coventry City Manchester United game. George Alderman has the latest.
Manchester United have won the penalty shootout 4-2 to get past Championship side Coventry and reach the FA Cup semi-final, but they've done it the hard way. The Coventry fans aren't leaving. They're still standing here and waving their flags after seeing a quite incredible comeback from their team. The Championship side were 3-0 down in the second half. Bruno Fernandes deflected shot, putting United 3-0 up. Looked like he'd sealed the tie for the Premier League team. But then Ellis Sims pulled the goal back for Coventry and United fell apart. That sparked wild celebrations in the Coventry end. United wilted under the pressure. A deflected effort past Onana made it 3-2. And then in the final minute of injury time, there was a penalty for Coventry. Hadji putting it away into the goal to make it 3-3 and send it into extra time. There was more drama in extra time. Coventry thought they'd won it in the final kick of extra time, but it was disallowed for offside following a VAR check. Hadji Wright's foot was just ahead of the last defender. It went to penalties, and there was an early boost for Coventry. Casemiro missing United's first penalty, but then misses from Callum O'Hare, and Ben Schaaf, the Coventry captain, left to Rasmus Højlund to wrap it up for United, and he made no mistake from the penalty spot. Manchester United winning 4-2 on penalties after an incredible FA Cup semi-final, which finished Coventry City 3, Manchester United 3. United into the final. They'll play Manchester City for the trophy again.
And that is everything that I've got time for this evening, folks. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. It's been Sarah McKenzie Foley with you here for the Sunday edition of the Big Red Bench. I hope that you enjoy and make the most of the sun with the rest of your Sunday. And make sure you stay tuned for Green on Red with Mags Blackburn up next.